Good afternoon, everyone. My name is David Torek, and I'll be talking to you about my research on the base life potential of perennial flax here. Just to give you a brief outline of this presentation, I'll start with some background of why we're interested in the species, then headed to the experimental design and results, and I'll close by talking about where we hope to take this research in the future and give you some examples of how you can use this crop in floral design. So this research is part of the Forever Green Initiative at the University of Minnesota. This is a research group dedicated to the domestication and improvement of perennial crop species. The goal of this program is to breed species that will provide ecosystem services like soil and water quality improvement, as well as support of our local and managed pollinator populations. These are all things that our current annual cropping systems aren't really doing in the state of Minnesota. However, one of the first steps when you're undertaking crop domestication is to identify a suitable market for that crop in order to make it economically viable for the farmer. And that's what we're hoping to do here with this research. We're investigating the potential of perennial flax to be a new cut flower crop for Minnesota growers. Perennial flax has a number of things going for it already. It's very winter hardy in Minnesota. It's survived extremely cold temperatures already. It's pollinator friendly. And it also has true blue flowers, which you all know are very rare in nature. There are, however, a couple barriers to adoption. The first of these is that prior to this experiment, the vase life was unknown. And there are also some issues with flower longevity, which I'll discuss in detail later on in this presentation. So the experimental design that we used, we had two cultivars, blue flax and sapphire. These were grown at two locations in Minnesota, one up in Grand Rapids in the northern part of the state. The second was in Morris, Minnesota, more in the west central part of the state. The treatments we used were based on the vase solution. The first of these was a deionized water control, and the second was a floral preservative solution. After harvest, the cut stems were immediately hydrated and then placed in a cooler on ice for transport back to campus. Once there, they were placed in a walk-in cooler at 4 degrees Celsius overnight until the experiment was started the next morning. For each vase, 200 mils of solution was measured out, and to prepare the stems, I stripped the lower half of the stem of leaves and then cut 1 inch from the base with a clean scalpel in order to prevent contamination that may have entered the stem during the process of harvest and transportation. The setup involved one stem per vase. This was set up in a completely randomized design on a laboratory benchtop under 24-hour light and room temperature. A number of measurements were recorded, most of these every 24 hours. This included the number of flowers open, as well as flower size measurements, and we also tagged each individual flower with a piece of colored yarn corresponding to a day of the week so that we could track individual flower longevity. Weekly water changes were also conducted, which allowed us to track water loss throughout the course of the experiment. And we also had water-only vases, which allowed us to estimate a background rate of evaporation for each solution, and also then estimate a evapotranspiration rate. This water loss data is not included in this presentation for the sake of time, and also because it didn't correlate with any of these major traits that we're interested in, but it'll be included later on once we try to publish this data. The data analysis was conducted using analysis variance, and I should point out, though, that post hoc tests were not conducted because, as you see here, for our factors, there are less than three groups, so we weren't able to do that, unfortunately. Now, getting into the results here, I want to preface this by just explaining how this is going to be laid out. In the top right of each slide, you'll see a table with summaries of the data broken down by cultivar and treatment. You'll notice that location is not included in this table, partly for simplicity, but also because location was rarely a significant factor for the traits that we measured. So also the ANOVA results are displayed in brackets within the table for cultivar and treatment, and you'll see the ANOVA results for location and the interactions displayed below that table. That being said, the overall average vase life across all of our groups was about 9.2 days. We had a significant treatment effect with the floral preservative solution having a vase life of about 1.5 to 2 days greater than the deionized water control group. Cultivar location and interactions in this case were all non-significant. On the left side of the screen, you can see a breakdown of our most common reasons for termination of vase life. Most of these had to do with degradation of quality of the flower buds, either chlorosis or wilt, which was localized at those flower buds. But in some cases, we had more systemic symptoms across the entire stem. The next trait I want to look at is the total number of flowers open throughout the duration of the experiment. This is our most striking difference between treatment groups. You can see that in both cultivars, the floral preservative group had more than double the number of flowers opening relative to the deionized water group. Again, cultivar location and interactions were all not significant here. The next trait I want to talk about is flower longevity. You can see that the biggest difference here is between our two cultivars, with Sapphire having about 2 day longer flower longevity relative to Blue Flax. Location was also slightly significant, but this p-value is right on the threshold. It was about 0.48, so there might be some G by E going on, but it's very slight and probably needs further study. Interactions and treatment here were not significant. Now, I do want to caution the interpretation of these results, and to understand why, we need to take a closer look at the biology of flax flowering. So this diagram shows a progression of flax flowering from anthesis in part A of this figure through abscission in part B and then petal drop in part C. Now, what I want you to focus on in this figure is actually the movements of the sepals over time. You'll see that moving from A to B, those sepals actually contract in towards the center of the flower. And what this does will after abscission, which occurs in part B, it'll actually temporarily hold those petals in place, sort of trapped between the sepals and the stamen filaments of the flower. Now, in the field, this isn't enough force to hold those petals in place because of wind and movement of the plants, but in laboratory conditions, we see this sort of thing where the petals remain in place for extended periods of time. And so this is part of what biased these measurements upwards, I think, because when we started this experiment, we were anticipating this flower drop issue because we'd seen this happen in the field, and so we had defined it the end of the flower life as being when the majority of those petals had dropped off. And so this is why I want to caution that interpretation. And I'll talk about more how we're going to address this in the future in just a moment. The last trait that I want to look at here is flower size. We see that Blue Flax consistently had a larger flower size, indicating that there is a genetic difference there. Cultivar was highly significant. Treatment also made some difference in flower size, with the floral preservative group consistently having larger flowers than the deionized water, which is to be expected given that that is providing some nutrients to those stems during this experiment. Location also had some slight effect, but this was very similar to earlier in flower longevity, where it was just on the threshold of significance. So there was also a location by cultivar interaction, which does indicate that there's probably stronger evidence for some G by E interaction going on in terms of flower size. Now, I just want to close quickly by talking about some future directions of where we hope to take this research. As I mentioned, flower longevity is something that we want to dig a little bit deeper into. And one of the ways that we're thinking about approaching this is using some source of wind to knock off those upsized petals and really try to look for true genetic differences in how long those petals are retained on the cutting. We're also interested in investigating ethylene inhibitors, such as 1-MCP, to see what effect that might have on flower longevity of these plants. Now, the third point here has more to do with post-harvest conditions. This is something that came up recently. So we harvested stems from the field a few weeks ago to make these floral designs, which I'll show you in a second. And the extra stems we ended up discarding into a compost bin in the greenhouse. This was left over the weekend, and it was very hot, about high 80s into the 90s. And the odd thing was that when we came in on Monday, we noticed that those stems were still in bloom, which might indicate that dry storage could be a possible way to extend the vase life of this crop. And so that's something we want to look into in the future. Also this year, we are evaluating multiple perennial flax species. For this experiment, we only looked at the species Linum perenni, but there are a number of different perennial flax species that we're evaluating, both for agronomic and horticultural uses. And this is also a great opportunity to look for interspecific variation for some of these key vase life traits. And the ultimate goal of all of this will then be to breed for cultivars with an improved cut flower habit, especially for traits like flower size, stem length, and flower longevity. Now I'll just close here by showing you some sample floral designs so you can get an idea of how we're thinking this crop will be used. We're imagining this to be used as a filler crop, mainly to accent texture and color. Now this is a good example of what you can expect the second day after harvest. Typically in that first day, the process of harvesting and transport and making the floral design will knock off most of those flowers that were already opened. But you get this really nice flush of flowers in the second day, and this will continue for 3 to 4 days after that point. Here's another example of flax used as a filler crop. And then finally, I want to show you an alternate use, which we're also kind of looking into, is that when you harvest later, you get these really nice textured seed pods, which are a great contrast to some of these larger flowers like roses that you see here. And with that, I'd just like to thank our funding sources, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and funding that has helped me to attend this conference today, the American Floral Endowment through the Altman Family Scholarship, as well as departmental funding through the University of Minnesota Department of Horticultural Science. And with that, I'd like to take any questions. Thank you.
I'll start. You talked about breeding for stem length and precision based or stem length. What kind of range do you have in the genomics, the genetics to deal with?
For stem length, we do see quite a range. You'll see in these, if I can go back to the picture of these two cultivars side by side, you see that Sapphire is very highly branched, whereas Blue Flax has much longer stems. And there's variation not only for stem length, but also where the first branch point occurs. And so this is something that we're looking at with our field phenotyping this year. It's something that's relevant not only to these cut flower applications, but also to our agronomic applications that we're looking at. And so we expect to find a range of variation to make selections for plants containing longer stems, but also a higher branch point, so you have more flexibility with how you use this in a floral arrangement.
Yeah. One possible comment is, if they're basal branching, you could include pinching as well. So if you grow the plant up and leave just a handful of nodes, you might have very long side shoots, which would increase productivity.
Yeah, that could be similar to also how they, when fiber flax is produced in the field, they seed it really close so that to prevent that basal branching and grow these really long stems. So yeah, that's something like pinching or seeding rate could affect that as well.
One question?
Yeah. You mentioned the 1 MCP, so do you know these are ethylene sensitive? Is it massive and abscission that ethylene?
We suspect that it is an ethylene sensitivity, but that's something we'll need to look into and see what effect it has on flower longevity. At this point, we really don't know, but I'm assuming it's ethylene related since those flowers do drop those petals so quickly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just a comment from many years of evaluating cut flowers and vases, sometimes just to get the petals to finally fall off, you just kind of shake it a little bit. We did that a lot. Just a little tap.
Yeah.
That's
a good suggestion, I think, in the future. Because I kind of just let it happen as it did during this experiment. You know, I was moving those vases around a lot to take data, but they still remained on, so I'll just let it go.
All right, we've got two more minutes. So he's setting a very high chance.
Jeez.
Can I ask another question?
Of course.
You're promoting this as a new variety to especially cut flower grower, like you want them to grow it. What's your pitch to them for this is how you treat this new cut flower that could be a good option for you? What do you say?
Okay. So you mean in terms of post harvest,
yeah,
how they should treat it, all of it. Well, I would suggest harvesting from the field and putting it into cold storage, at least at this current stage. That's what we've been doing so far, and it seems to work fairly well. And then use a floral preservative solution. And yeah,
base life,
I would expect around 8 to 10 days of base life. Yeah. Yep.
Have you tried or seen since flowers are opening after you harvest? Have you tried harvesting before flowers have even opened at all?
Yeah, so the interesting thing with flax is that it'll flower from the bottom of the stem up with typically one flower per stem opening per day. And so it's kind of a fine balance. We're thinking right now that we'll want to harvest when about 50% of those flowers have opened so that the flowers aren't way down on the stem when you put them in a floral arrangement. But this is something we're going to have to look into over time as we start to develop this as a cut flower crop.
All right, let's give them another round of applause.
Thank you.